In the midst of a maelstrom over Trump's response on a hypothetical abortion question, we have learned again two things. First, the startling straightforwardness of Donald's mind. Second, how the media constantly looks to discredit any person it disagrees with or cannot control. The brouhaha over a theoretic penalty for breaking a proposed law was nonsensical, except for touching on the feminist ultra-shibboleth of abortion. But the rage against Trump and his supposed thousandth final straw reveals how tenuous the media establishment and both major parties feel about Trump. He is the existential threat in Obama's deepest, darkest nightmares. Further, both parties fear a hot purgatory or Hades should he win. Meanwhile, we're informed that the devil who went down to Texas, the fiery Ted Cruz, will be mathematically eliminated in late April, all things being equal, even if he wins Wisconsin. This hasn't stopped the inane and crazy GOP from plotting another crazy suicide run on Trump. Shooters from a grassy knoll or knight and white horse parachuting in. Kasich can't wait for the convention. Smug Paul Ryan, with the White House glittering in his eyes, sharpens his harpoon waiting to spear this white trophy. But while listeners boil over the party's main man being removed like an abscessed tooth, we still have the next primary. That's tomorrow, friends, in Wisconsin. And with Cruz carrying a small lead into this race, it should be exciting. In the meanwhile, after many giant states vote, New Mexico could play the role of the ultimate spoiler. Could Trump squeak in over the finish line with New Mexico's final boost? Stranger things have happened. Stay tuned, sports fans. Good morning, 608. Kelly here, and got Brother Kev with me in the studio. And we're still kind of getting some fallout from the Trump situation with abortion. And I've got some other stuff going out there, weather headlines, et cetera. And Bernie Sanders is screaming about Hillary's fossil fuel lies. Did you know that experts are saying Obama could have stopped ISIS? Well, of course he could have. And I've got a few stories about our ongoing immigration disaster and a doctor shortage. But good morning, Kevin.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Good.
And what are your plans today?
Well, today I'm going to wrap up my visit to the Las Cruces area and start winging my way back to Alaska.
And what was your reaction to your trip?
Oh, it's been a very enjoyable time to come down and spend some quality time in your area and see the local sites and eat some good food. So I've had a good time and have met some very nice, friendly people here.
Must not have been my friends that you met, but
I was being nice.
Trying to be nice, huh? All right, so 6:10, and here I've got a few stories for you on what's going on in weather-wise. And also, kind of a global warming related fact is they've had massive late snow in Colorado, and believe it or not, they had snow out in some Caribbean islands, and they say that it's unheard of. They've never seen it before. And Germany had so much snow that it's really disrupted their traffic. They had feet of snow, and this is all recent stuff. So the battle between the pro-global warming and anti-global warming forces continues. Here, though, I've got Winter Storm Ursula bringing snow and winds to the northeast. Check this one out.
April showers bring May flowers, right? Does that work if you have snow, though? Looks like that was a cold jug this weekend in Syracuse with the snow coming down. Plymouth, Mass., there's the flakes flying from Winter Storm Ursula, which dumped over 5 inches of snow back to Michigan. Now, this storm is still on the move. It's pushing to the east and basically pushing through New England this morning. We do have some rain on the southern edge, but the snowfall coming through New England could pile up a few inches by the end of today. Now, the winds, that was a big story through the weekend. They will subside, but we are looking at still some pretty decent wind gusts back through New York and Boston until tomorrow morning. As far as snow totals go, that's what we're looking at. For suburbs of Boston, you could see 5 to 8 inches. It's a general, though, 3 to 5 through New England.
All right, and I've got a little bit here on dangerous winds causing multiple injuries.
Since Saturday, there have been at least 9 injuries due to wind-related incidents across a variety of states, including Virginia, Connecticut, all the way back over into Indiana. So many locations across the Northeast getting hit very hard, and tons of power outages. As a matter of fact, in Indiana alone, at least 60,000 power outages on Saturday. Thankfully, those numbers are starting to come down. Now, we're going to get away from the significant blasts of wind, at least across New England, as we go into the later evening hours of Sunday. But remember, as the next Clipper system moves through, we're going to be talking about the winds flaring up again in the 30 to 40 mile per hour range. So please keep that in mind. Yes, it'll also be colder. And yes, we'll see additional snow totals through early.
Okay, and cold temperatures to continue in Lake Great Lakes and Northeast. And these are all from your Weather Channel.
The cold has rushed in places like Boston. Not just Boston, you're going to be looking at some very cold temperatures for the first week of April, but also back through the Midwest. It is going to be a cold start to the week. Really, throughout the week, we're looking at this cold coming in. So check out these temperatures for Monday. Now, we have 50s and 30s back from the Midwest to New England and parts of the Eastern Great Lakes. So temperatures are going to be running on average 10 degrees below normal. Look at Buffalo on Tuesday. They're 19 degrees below normal. So it will be cold. And also with the winds whipping, we will see wind chills pretty brutal from the Midwest to the Northeast. So it is going to be a cold start to April.
Well, I don't know. I couldn't, I might have just played that one clip. Sometimes they have the same clips under different headings. But anyway, it is unseasonably cold and snowy. And up north and on the West Coast, I saw Pacific Northwest getting some rain. So, all right. So I'm going to come back and fill you in on some of this stuff that's going on with Trump. But I think that what I realized is when Kevin and I were at my house talking about Trump, we came to some different conclusions. So we're going to bring that disagreement on the air. Ray Price, Heartaches by the Number. Ray Price this week, one of the greatest voices in the history of country music. Kelly O'Connell, 614, AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE, and it's 523-1450. I think I left the text machine on the kitchen table, but we'll be right back to discuss a little bit of Trump.
Heartache number one was when you left me. I never knew that I could hurt this way. And heartache number two was when you come back again. You came back and never missed a day. Now I've got heartache by the number. I've got heartache by the number, a love that I can't spend. That's the day that I stop counting, that's the day my world will end.
All right, so we've got Trump, and he is obviously heading into Wisconsin. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, and 523-1450, by the way, to call in, Trump is, you know, it's still confusing. It's still extremely confusing that we are in the situation that we're in, whereas some people are claiming Trump is going to win enough points. He's going to have enough delegates. Another group of people are claiming he can't get the delegates, and so he is going to have a brokered convention. And then Reince Priebus gets up and says that he is going to that we're going to have the person who's going to be leading the party in the election is a person who's running right now. That means there's three people there, where he said, I have a feeling. In addition to that, then you've got individuals who are coming up with other crazy ways to stop this. And then you have the original statement that the party leaders would rather, many of them would rather have Hillary than Trump. So anyway, Kevin and I were kind of debating this out last night, and at which point I think I got kind of aggravated with this idea that you came up with, Kevin, that Trump owes it to the country to drop out if there is a brokered convention. Is that a reflection of your position?
No, I don't think that he should drop out, but I'm just confused about the process of which he signed an agreement that he's going to stick to the party, and he's gone through all the requirements and gets the delegates. And then as that point becomes to pass, that all of a sudden they're saying, no, if you have the delegates or not, we're still not going to let you be the person. I find that just very confusing to people that aren't following it very close.
Well, I mean, fortunately I am following it close myself. So I believe that, what we've got right here is a very, very tight race. Obviously, on the delegate end, we're going to be coming into possibly the last weeks of the primaries, with Trump not having closed the deal quite yet, ironically, given his name of this book. And so the upshot is, so there's only a couple of questions out there, and one of which is, if Trump gets all the delegates that he needs to get the nomination, is he going to just be allowed to take to be the nominee? And it seems like that has been the consensus that we've arrived at. Now, if he doesn't have all the delegates, then all hell breaks loose. And so you've got a couple of different things. Cruz saying, I want my shot. Kasich saying that I'd be a better leader than either one of these two. Choose me. So the first round ballot, these people have to vote who they came to the party with, who they came to the prom with. They vote that, and then there are independent people in there say if Marco Rubio's people, who do they vote for? So Trump could get voted in a first round. If the first round doesn't work, then the next round is all delegates can vote for whoever they want. Now, in the meantime, there's this massive war going on across the United States, in the various states, with candidates fighting for delegates within the state. And it is somewhat confusing because it's not clear in the state rules whether the delegates who were voted in on a particular candidate have to vote for him. So that part is the guerrilla war that's going on right now. So anyway, I couldn't even read y'all the headlines that are out there right now. Trump has reached maximum unfathomable ignorance, maximum incoherence. And in the meantime, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz shifting into high gear in Wisconsin. In the last poll that I saw, had Donald Trump up by 5. Donald Trump confident odds are in his favor in Wisconsin, and this is from ABC News, and we'll see if we can get this thing to play for you. But, you know, it's just, you know, and one of the things that, Trump says that, I think is interesting is that we, you know, if you can't win, you shouldn't be in the race. Therefore, John Kasich should be out of the race, just like Marco Rubio dropped out of the race when it became clear that he was not able to win. So, I mean, I don't disagree with that sentiment, and maybe that should be the rule. But at the same time, Rince Priebus standing up and saying that that it's going to be somebody in the race right now is running probably is kind of eye opening. Makes you wonder if they're not backing Kasich from the back. In the meantime, Trump is predicting a very massive recession in the United States, and I think that is not inconsistent. A recession is not inconsistent with the fact that every at least 7 years the country heads into a recession. So whether we are arguing about what being in a recession right now, I think that, you know, we're going to, it would appear from the figures that I've seen, that we're going to be having more problems with the economy. All right, we'll take a little break here and come back, and we've got some more. I'll tell you a little bit about this story on Cruz being done by the end of April, which might offend a few of our listeners like Donna. 627 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. We'll be right back.
You call me. Back today. With a full heart, I waited for your knock on the door. I waited, but you have lost your way. Now I'm parting.
All right, so basically what we've got going on here now is a situation for Ted Cruz where, and this is the first time that I saw this, but I mean, at some point it's going to come to a head here where, you know, you run out of time to get all your delegates, even if you're running well, like Bernie Sanders, you're coming in and winning three states in a row. If you don't have the amount of time and delegates left, or actually the amount of delegates left, it doesn't really matter. And so this is from Gateway Pundit, and they're saying, based on current situation, Ted Cruz will be knocked out of race by April 26th. Based on current delegate counts and poll numbers, Ted Cruz will be mathematically unable to reach the delegate count required for him to win the Republican presidential nomination. By the end of April, it will be clear that Ted Cruz has no chance of reaching 1,237 delegates needed to win the nomination. And then he says, in the Gateway Pundit guy says, 3 weeks on April 26th, it will be Ted Cruz cannot win. So obviously Ted Cruz is sticking around to play the spoiler. And, you know, and that's what the party wants. So you've got Ted Cruz, who's been hated by the Republican Party for the entire period that he's been in office. And then you've got John Kasich, who comes across as like Mr. Rogers, but at the same time, he is, from what I understand, dealing with him personally, is not a very nice guy. And is not very popular. And so you've got these two people, you've got three people that the party is really not enthusiastic about. Turning around to Hillary and Bernie is probably the most personally popular individual running right now in these races, with the high unfavorables of Trump and Hillary and, you know, Cruz. A lot of people hate Cruz. You're turning around and seeing that the only person who is popular in the both sides is unelectable. So, I mean, it's a very strange situation that we're in right now, and it's only going to get stranger. Now, I've got Nate Silver, who used to be at the New York Times and is the person who predicted to a highly accurate level this race with Obama last time. As a matter of fact, the last two races with Obama, he predicted that he would win, even against people like Karl Rove. And he's saying it's probably first ballot or bust for Donald Trump at the GOP convention. And they're talking about the betting that's going on, and some people are kind of wagering on this stuff. And they're saying that there's a 63% chance that the convention in Cleveland will be brokered or require multiple ballots. In the meantime, people are believing out there that Trump has a 56% chance of winning the nomination. And so he says, you know, there's a contradiction here, and that Trump's numbers have obviously gone down. So, you know, the fact is that as time goes by, you've got more and more of these crazy plans to get rid of Donald Trump, which are, you know, some of them are absolutely ludicrous. Others seem a little bit more realistic, but the story is one of an unhappy group of people who feel like they are going to be removed if Trump gets into office. And then they pretend that Trump is not Republican enough to make it, which may be true. He, you know, Trump may be not the kind of guy that you want to lead your party. But if Trump, you know, battles and fights and wins the delegates, I don't see how you walk away from that. Or if he's vastly in the lead, I don't see where, you know, the party gains from having said, you know, he didn't win all the delegates that we need, so therefore we're going to replace him with our own person. So anyway, let's take a we'll take a break here and come back, and I'll tell you about the Bernie Sanders story about Hillary lying about getting gas money. 634, 635, Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450 on AM Las Cruces, KOBE. All right, so I've got, I don't know if you've heard Hillary Clinton, as they say, losing patience with a Greenpeace activist and lashing out in a way that only Hillary can, like an angry truck driver. Check this out. Hillary is so sick about the Sanders campaign lying about her taking fossil fuel money. And Bernie Sanders calling Hillary Clinton out, you owe me an apology.
Just days away from the Wisconsin vote, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are throat-to-throat about accusations of taking money for campaign funding from the oil and gas industry. Clinton has said she's fed up with the Sanders campaign accusing her of taking money from big corporations like the oil and gas industry. She also claims that Sanders has taken money from the same group of people himself. Sanders denies those accusations and goes a step further, saying to his opponent, Secretary Clinton, you owe us an apology. We were telling the truth.
All right, so I have a little bit more on this, and it is a... it's a big deal to Hillary Clinton on this thing that Sanders has been lying. And, you know, I have no idea what the expectations of these people are. For example, for Hillary, does she really expect that there's not going to be, I just have this feeling that with Hillary, there was this belief that Sanders was supposed to be nice to her no matter what. And so now we get into this thing about oil. Hillary is apparently, according to Sanders, lied about taking oil money. And, you know, Hillary has been supported by Wall Street quite a bit. And the upshot is that it appears that she has taken quite a bit of oil money, and so now Sanders wants a public apology about that. But I mean, that, you know, the fact of the matter is that Hillary is so far ahead that it doesn't really matter who takes money from whom, because again, I mean, I see the race as basically being over, and the fact of the matter is that Hillary has made whatever pact she's made with the devil to get to this point in the race. And now, Sanders can choke on it. I mean, Sanders is unelectable. And when they had O'Malley running against Hillary, that was their best shot. They got rid of O'Malley. O'Malley didn't even really have much of a chance. They barely talked to him. So both parties are in the same position of having someone who's got a high negativity. And it could be two people that individuals hate running against one another. So here's a little bit on Greenpeace and Hillary's connections to oil and gas.
Green Report, we head to New York, where on Thursday, Bernie Sanders held a massive rally in the Bronx. Around 18,500 people showed up, including actress Rosario Dawson and renowned movie director Spike Lee. The event capped off an excellent month for Sanders, who drew in another 1.7 million contributions for a record total of $44 million. And just as Bernie was celebrating his people-powered campaign, his opponent for the Democratic nomination, Hillary Clinton, was facing new scrutiny over her, well, not-so-people-powered campaign. At an event in Purchase, New York, Greenpeace activists pressed Clinton on her campaign's connections to the fossil fuel industry. Former Secretary of State was, shall we say... So is the Sanders campaign lying? Or is Hillary just mad that her corporate connections have been exposed once again? Joining me now is Molly Dorozinski, Democracy Campaign Director at Greenpeace USA. Molly, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So, right up front, does Hillary Clinton accept money from the fossil fuel industry? And if so, how?
She absolutely does. So, our research department has done a really thorough tracking of the contributions that she's received from the industry. And we see that she has taken, you know, $1.3 million from registered lobbyists for the oil, coal, and gas industry. And a lot of those are bundled contributions. And that doesn't even address, you know, if you add up that plus the money that her super PAC receives from the fossil fuel industry, it's actually $4.5 million.
So can you explain what bundled means?
Yeah, it means that the lobbyists can kind of maximize the amount of money that they are able to take, you know, by getting lots of people who have individual contributions that cap out at $2,700 and putting them all together and giving them as one unit.
So this is why some of our fundraisers have a $27,000 floor. It means you have to have gotten, what would it be, 10 or 100 donations from other people and bring them bundled together and hand them to get into the event kind of thing.
Yeah,
now that's her campaign, where there's a $2,700 limit and it's all from people. What about the super PACs?
Yeah, so the super PACs, you know, we acknowledge that. So the pledge that we're asking Hillary Clinton to take is to refuse direct contributions from lobbyists, fossil fuel executives. We're not actually, you know, at this point, we would like for her to publicly say to her super PAC to stop taking money from the fossil fuel industry. But we also understand that she doesn't actually have control over what the super PAC accepts. So she can call on them to do that publicly, but she can't coordinate with her super PAC. So the total from the super PAC is $3.25 million. Which is not nothing. You know, she said several times that she thinks that this is not a lot of money, but it actually is quite a bit of money.
Yeah. So, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, or maybe we should, I'm guessing that there are probably some fossil fuel industry employees out there who like Bernie Sanders, but they might work for Koch Industries or ExxonMobil or something. Mm-hmm. And you have to put that on the form when you fill it in. So probably by that standard, Bernie is also accepting money from the fossil fuel industry. Is the major difference that Hillary is actually asking lobbyists to bundle from the fossil fuel industry to bundle money and bring it in? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, it's the fact that she's taken money from lobbyists at all. So when Obama ran in 2008, he didn't take any money from lobbyists. In 2012, he said he wasn't going to take some money and he had to return some. Sanders doesn't take money from lobbyists. So that 50,000 figure that you've heard that Sanders has taken from the fossil fuel industry, that is really individual employees. Mm-hmm. Back in January, when we asked him to take a pledge to stop taking that money, he did sign that pledge. So we're looking at that 50,000 now to see if any of that is after he signed the pledge. But we believe that so far, we haven't seen anything that has been in violation of the pledge.
Very interesting. Secretary Clinton's argument, of course, is that even if she has accepted money from the fossil fuel industry, it hasn't affected her actions as either senator or secretary of state, and therefore implicitly won't affect her decisions as president should she get that position. Is that true?
I mean, we would really like to believe that. I think that Hillary Clinton does have a strong record on climate. We've appreciated the fact that she has come out against Arctic drilling, come out against Atlantic drilling, and has really been a champion for a lot of the issues.
Well, I mean, I don't personally think that Hillary's a champion of anything. She's more of a chameleon. But she got into a lot of trouble with the abortion people, the abortion supporters, when she was asked by Chuck Todd if a child has an unborn child has any rights. Check this out. Speaking of Hillary trouble.
You know, also this week, you were pretty tough on Donald Trump on one of his positions on abortion. He had five different positions that we've counted up this week on abortion. I want to ask you, what is yours? Give me your straightforward position on the issue of abortion.
My position is in line with Roe v. Wade, that women have a constitutional right to make these most intimate and personal and difficult decisions based on their conscience, their faith, their family, their doctor, and that it is something that really goes to the core of privacy. And I want to maintain that constitutional protection under Roe v. Wade. As you know, there is room for reasonable kinds of restrictions after a certain point in time. I think the life, the health of the mother are clear, and those should be included even as one moves on in pregnancy.
When or if doesn't...
I've had I've had the same position for many years.
When or if does an unborn child have consequences?
Well, under our laws currently, that is not something that exists. The unborn person doesn't have constitutional rights. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't do everything we possibly can in the vast majority of instances to, you know, help a mother who is carrying a child and wants to make sure that child will be healthy, to have appropriate medical support. It doesn't mean that you don't do everything possible to try to fulfill your obligations, but it does not include sacrificing the woman's right to make decisions. And I think that's an important distinction that under Roe v. Wade, we've had enshrined under our Constitution.
You had said you're for some, you think some, there are room for some restrictions. So is it fair to say that women don't always have a full right to choose?
Well, under Roe v. Wade, that is the law. And as I said, I support the reasoning and the outcome in Roe v. Wade. So in the third trimester of pregnancy, there is room for looking at the life and the health of the mother. Now, most people, not all Republicans, not all conservatives, even agree with the life of the mother, but most do. Where the distinction comes in is the health of the mother. And when you have candidates running for president who say that there should be no exceptions, not for rape, not for incest, not for health, then I think you've gotten pretty extreme. And my view has always been, this is a choice. It is not a mandate. You know, I have traveled all over the world. What happens when governments make these decisions, whether it was forced sterilization, forced abortion in China, or forced childbearing in communist Romania. So I don't think that we should be allowing the government to make decisions that really properly belong to the individual.
The government is making decisions, though, when you see that the government is coming in and saying that no matter what, women are going to have a right to have an abortion. And I have never understood, and nor do I believe that there is any connection between privacy and having an abortion, although it may be something that you do in private. It just has never made any sense to me. But I think that shows the tenuousness of these abortion laws. It's always been a situation where, you know, the left and the feminists. By the way, I wanted to tell you something that was so amazing. I don't even know what I was thinking. I was very tired. It was a couple of nights ago. Right before I went to bed, I typed in feminism as cancer. I do all kinds of random searches on Google and YouTube and everything. And believe it or not, I still am kind of find this hard to believe that I kind of ran into this. There is a report out there, multiple reports, that David Bowie's last words were, feminism is cancer. What do you think about that, Kev?
Well, I think that's quite a statement for a person's last words. Very profound.
I wonder if he was working on a song in his mind.
Could be.
So anyway, and I know that there are some radical or strong feminists out there, but I think a lot of young women, the millennial generation, Gen X and stuff, have walked away from feminism to a large degree. Now, here is Donald Trump's now infamous statement, women deserve some form of punishment for abortion, and what they're calling his worst week in his campaign.
Should the woman be punished for having an abortion? Look, and this is not something you can dodge. If you say abortion is a crime or abortion is murder, you have to deal with it under the law. Should abortion be punished?
Well, people in certain parts of the Republican Party and conservative Republicans would say, yes, they should be punished.
How about you?
I would say that it's a very serious problem, and it's a problem that we have to decide on. It's very hard.
But you're forbidding
it. Are you going to say, well, wait, are you going to say put them in jail? Is that
well,
the
no, what I'm asking you, because you say you want to ban it. What's that mean?
I am pro-life, yes.
What is ban? How do you ban abortion? How do you actually do it?
Well, you know, you'll go back to a position like they had where people will perhaps go to illegal places.
Yeah,
but you have to ban it.
Ban it, and they go to somebody who flunked out of medical school.
Are you Catholic?
Yes, I think I.
And how do you feel about the Catholic churches?
Well, all right, so we played this already, and Matthews was smart to smoke him out there, but I mean, at the same time, a theoretical question. We will take a break and get Donald's new position on abortion or whatever he said about it. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, 523 1450 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And I'll have your weather for you right now.
Now I've got heartache by the number.
All right, here is Donald Trump's cleaning up the abortion mess, which, I think a lot of people on the right heard that and said, thank God somebody's fighting against it. Although abortion clinics are going down all around the country, and abortion is favored by less than 50% of the people. So anyway, here you go.
There's been a lot of commentary this week that this has been the worst week in your campaign. A lot of people want to stop you. Are they succeeding?
I don't know that it's been the worst week in my campaign. I think I've had many bad weeks and I've had many good weeks. I don't see this as the worst week in my campaign, but certainly I've had some weeks, and you've been reporting on them, where that was the end. And then the next week you see poll numbers where they went up and everybody's shocked. So people want to stop me because I'm leading by a lot. The new polls that came out have me leading by just about more than ever. NBC had a very good national poll that just came out, and I guess I'm leading very big in New York and Pennsylvania.
Let me ask you a question about abortion. What would you do to further restrict women's access to abortion as president?
Well, look, I I know where you're going, and I just want to say, a question was asked to me, and it was asked in a very hypothetical, and it was said illegal. I've been told by some people that was a older line answer, and that was an answer that was given on a basis of an older line from years ago, on a very conservative basis.
Your original answer, you mean?
My original.
But
was asked as a hypothetically, the laws are set now on abortion, and that's the way they're going to remain until they're changed.
Because you had said you told Bloomberg in January that you believed abortion should be banned at some point in pregnancy. Where would you?
Well, I would have liked to have seen, this be a states' rights. I would have preferred states' rights. I think it would have been better if it were up to the states. But right now the laws are set, and that's the way the laws are.
But do you have a feeling how they should change? There are a lot of laws you want to change. You've talked about them on everything from libel to torture. Anything you'd want to change
at
on abortion?
At this moment, the laws are set, and I think we have to leave it that way.
All right. So, here's the thing that I find interesting about Donald Trump. He is got his own beliefs, and then he's entered the race and he started to mix his answers around based on what he thinks the party wants. But, at some level, that's what the system is set up for, people that represent other individuals' ideas and their beliefs and everything. I think that when you get into a crisis is when statesmanship comes out, and also building a vision for a country. So you don't have to just be a robot of the people or a puppet, but we have been under this burden for decades of this messianic model of leadership, with maybe even starting back before Bill Clinton, where some great person's going to come in, and because they're, like the Obama thing, because they are sincere, we're going to follow them, whether people agree with the premises or not. We're going to follow them into the future. It's been a total disaster, and we need to get back to politicians who are humble and represent what the people want. And the war and the giant disaster that's going on in the party right now, and the GOP, is coming from this battle between the individuals who want representation of the group versus these elites. And it's the elites that are killing the party. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell, and we'll be right back after a break on the air. I already pick it up, and I'm going to ask you if feminism is cancer. We'll be right back.
By the number, a love that I can't win, but the day that I stop counting, that the day my world will end. Heartache number three was when you called me. Coming back today. With a full heart, I waited for your knock on the door. I waited, but you must have lost your way.
All right, folks, 7:06 here, and I had made a planning on doing a show about this, but we might as well get into it a little bit. I'll certainly get into more of your news for you, including the claim that Obama could have staved off ISIS, and also that the immigration is getting worse and worse. And my question is, Here's a question for you. I don't know how controversial it would be. I think I know what my audience believes, but the immigration thing is getting so bad. Would President Obama try to go around to the world's prisons and release, you know, bring 747s full of convicts and fly them over here and release them under the theory that that's the kind of country we are? I mean, I don't understand bringing in hundreds of thousands of felons into this country and releasing them. Who's going to pay for that? Who's going to pay for the, and when I say who's going to pay for it, we are going to pay for it. We are the ones who are going to get murdered or robbed or raped. And in addition to struggling through 10 years of recession, and the president insists that we bring in more and more people, that's an issue. The illegal part of it is an issue. But then you've got this whole other thing where Obama wants to bring in increasing numbers of Muslims from across the world because that's who America is and we owe it to them. And by the way, it really doesn't matter what they believe in. And I think Kevin and I were talking about this earlier. When the problem in and this is a little tip of the hat to Kathy, who hates religion and would prefer nobody be allowed to talk about it ever again. I think the problem in Europe is ultimately that Europe has this cult of religion in which, and I think to a fair extent, we kind of buy into this too. All religions are the same. All religions are good. All religions have God in them. All religions are peaceful. And when we run into a religion that doesn't seem to fit this model, which appears to be Islam, which appears to be a movement that tries to, and I just reread this article I had mentioned that I had written an article on Muslim law, and it was used in a university course to teach about the segment on Muslim law. And I had kind of forgotten about some of this, is that, you know, they're trying to establish zones where people accept or have to at least acknowledge Allah. And it is not it's not an attempt to go in and convert people. It's an attempt to come in and take over areas. And so, which is a whole nother, you know, it's a whole nother show there. But so anyway, I was absolutely astounded when I ran into this statement that David Bowie said feminism is cancer. And I mean, the guy's dying. Why would he say something like that? Unless he thinks he got sick from cancer, but or from feminism, I feel like feminism is something you can almost not talk about because it's so controversial, because there's a generation of women that are older out there who consider feminism their religion or their set of beliefs that help move them out of the, you know, from being manacled to the sink. It moved them from there to being able to take place in with work and job and voting and all this stuff. Whether or not that is historically accurate, that's what they believe. And it basically saved women in history. And then you've got another group of women that kind of accepted it, but were not as enthusiastic about it. And then there's another group of women that I think that are coming up that accept all of the good that they think that feminism is associated with as a given, and maybe this is the entitlement generation, but they don't like feminism. And I don't know personally. When I started looking into the feelings of younger women on feminism, I was shocked to see that almost across the board, younger women don't seem to be that enthusiastic about it, unless they're lesbians, unless they're university feminists. And so it really kind of made me wonder, why is it attacked so much? If it's done so much good, if so many people think it's done so much good, why would you attack it? How could you attack it? Or has, all things being considered, has feminism harmed America? Has it I'm sure it hasn't farmed anything, but has it harmed the West? Has it harmed individuals? Has it brought dissent and disgust and fury into marriages? Has it alienated mothers from children? and wives from husbands. I'm just curious what you think about that. I wish I could ask David Bowie why he thought feminism was cancer, or if he did, maybe he was hallucinating. You know, maybe he saw Rosie O'Donnell over his bed before he died. But Kevin, what it's you hear the term feminism, what comes to mind? This is Brother Kevin, by the way, visiting from Alaska.
It brings to mind that if you don't say the right thing, you're going to be sleeping on the couch.
Is that across America, do you think?
I think that's a universal problem.
So 523-1450, if you have an opinion on this, if you're female, feel free to call in on this. And I wasn't really planning on talking about it, but I mean, I don't really necessarily know how you get ready for this topic. It's simply because it's so controversial and everybody has an opinion on it. It's not really necessarily something that you would do factual research on, you know, but I know this is okay. This is my impression, and I haven't done a poll of this, but if the people that I know, I think that if I knew them and to a large attorneys in the town and everything, which I wouldn't for obvious reasons, I'm not going to be quoting any of my friends on feminism. What is your opinion on feminism? And I think most people would say either they're indifferent. You know, I know a few guys that claim to be card-carrying feminists or what are supporting the works of feminism. But I mean, I think for the most part, it has a negative opinion, and yet you cannot criticize it. So, and once again, I've done this before on the show. I've brought up feminism and people didn't respond to it. And I don't know if it's because, and if you have an opinion, now's the time to get in at 523-1450. But, you know, it just seems to me something that people hate, but they don't really want to talk about it. And I think a lot of women hate it, although I'm not sure as much as to why they hate it when it's supposed to be this thing that has saved. And now my computer's kind of locking up on me as usual. I tried to open up this quote from David Bowie. I just wonder, I mean, I know that he was dying, and so his mind was not in the right place, but at the same time, he must have had something. I mean, for the last statement that you make to somebody, you know, I hate feminism or feminism is cancer or anything like that, I just find it so really extraordinary. So anyway, phone's not lighting up, so we will switch gears here. Kelly O'Connell, 715 on the button. And AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back.
Blame it on the drug.
It's Kelly here and got Brother Kev. The temperature outside, 39 degrees. All right. I had mentioned to you a little bit about Obamacare. America's million doctor shortage is right around the corner. And this is from MarketWatch.com. And they're saying that the U.S. could lose as many as 1 million doctors by 2025, according to the Association of American Medical Colleges report. And one of the things that they're talking about is, and I'm not sure that this is related to Obamacare, but it kind of got me thinking that I had heard that there were a number of doctors that we're planning on retiring early, et cetera, going into some other line of work if Obamacare was passed. But this article is saying 65 million people live in what's essentially a primary care desert, according to the report. These are people without doctors that are primary care physicians. And they said without these doctors, the medical system is, quote, putting out fires, just treating the patients when they get really sick. So, and one of the people, Dr. Ramanthan Raju, CEO of Public Hospital System, New York City Health Plus Hospitals, goes even further, saying that the U.S. lacks a basic primary care system. I think we really killed primary care in this country. It needs to be addressed yesterday. So there's a shortage across the country, and I'll just read this a little bit because we're included in it. The primary care gap is particularly acute in about one-third of states, which have only half or less of their primary care needs being met. Connecticut is at 15%, Missouri is at 30%, Rhode Island is at 33%, Alaska 35%, North Dakota 37%, and New Mexico 42%, Nebraska 42%, South Dakota 45%, North Carolina 50%, Florida 42%, New York 43%. So, you know, it's absolutely shocking. But it was predicted, and I don't know if it's a demographic thing, you know, if we're having less kids, therefore, you know, we've got a group of doctors that are being replaced, or maybe they're not graduating, taking in as many doctors and graduating as many. But they say that part of it is that primary care doctors make less. High-paying specialties can make $350,000 a year. Extremely, you know, focused, areas of care, you can make $500,000 a year, such as orthopedic surgery. Primary care fields tend to bring in less than $200,000 a year. And, you know, understand that many of these people are paying off student loans as well. So, and it is a highly stressful job in which there is constant expectations that no mistakes are being made. And so obviously, if you're bringing in a bunch of people that are illegal, for example, and you're insisting that they get into the medical system as well, and you're bringing in millions of people who by definition probably are not going to have insurance, it's only going to put more and more strains on this as we expect Obamacare to take over the medical system of the United States. So, Trump is claiming that he's going to repeal Obamacare, although what he's going to put in it is not clear. And the federal Congressional Budget Office's latest report reveals that there was a mistake of gigantic proportions in the adding up of how much money was supposed to come in to Obamacare. And according to MotleyFool.com or Fool.com, they overstated the income by $146 billion, which is really extraordinary. So it came from initial claims of how many people were going to be coming in, that were down 16 million individuals. So that is not good news. And overall, Obamacare has had a very poor month. So
I think those numbers were highly inflated on the people that were supposed to sign up, and also what they were going to bring in, and the costs were totally underestimated. So there's no secret for the $140 billion discrepancy.
Sounds about right. All right, let's take a break here, and we will, here's a little more Ray Price for you. We'll come back and talk about the border situation and what we can do about it, which is, doesn't appear to be much that we can do about it until current administration gets overturned. And then what is the next administration planning on doing? Kelly O'Connell, 624 with my brother, Kevin. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in.
Recorded live from Austin, Texas, it's Austin City Limits with the singer who's a keystone of contemporary country music, Ray Price and the Cherokee Cowboys.
Kelly, hi, it's Lydia.
Hey, what's up?
I had a question about the jail for abortion.
About the what?
The question is, I thought you could put it out to the post-abortive women in your audience. If they knew jail was an option for abortion, would they have chosen life
right.
for their baby?
Lydia.
And would their own life have been better?
Lydia, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Why don't you ask them? I'll put you on hold and you can ask them, okay?
Okay.
Just hang in there. You'll be fine.
Okay.
All right,
thank you.
All right, folks, we did get a phone call on abortion, and this is Lydia, and you had a question for women who are thinking about abortion?
Actually, it's a question for women, well, both, who are post-abortive, who've had an abortion, and ones who are considering. Would you have chosen life for your baby if you knew that jail was an option? And then, you know, obviously if you did choose life, it would be better for the baby, but would your own life be better? Especially the post-abortive can think about that. And then the second part of the question is, you know, like for a post-abortive woman, what if you had chosen an abortion and ended up in jail? What would that have meant to you?
And what do you think the average woman would say, the average person thinking about it?
You know, I can just answer for myself because I've been pondering this for days. I think that jail would have deterred me from the abortion I had. And because if the country, you know, declared it illegal, that would have meant something to me. And I would have, I hope I would have chosen life, and then I wouldn't have murder on my conscience the rest of my life. But I don't know. Maybe I would have found a way anyway and done jail time. But even that, you know, I think that would have been okay because it would have been a penance, if that makes sense.
Are you Catholic?
I am.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. So you have had an abortion.
Yes.
And that's something that you still think about quite a bit?
I'm sad, but I know God's forgiven me. I know I'll see my baby in heaven. But I feel sad about that. A little baby being dismembered inside you, and I believe life begins at conception. It's a human.
Yeah. I have no idea what it would be like to do that. So, but don't you think that through having abortion, some women realize that it was wrong? I mean, just kind of inherently in their, you know, their gut or their conscience tells them that.
Sure, but wouldn't it be better not to have had to go through? I mean, if the culture would tell us this is a life, like slave trade, you know, let's not have slaves. Let's not do that.
Right. Well, I mean, I think number one, people are confused because when they hear somebody like Hillary Clinton standing up and she does a legal analysis of abortion, she kind of avoids talking about the moral aspects of it. And then people, like you say, hear that it's legal, then things that are not illegal are not wrong to do. So I think there's a lot of confusion out there. And then we tend to be a society that's very focused on quick fixes. So, Well, I don't know. I mean, you can call in 523-1450 if you have an opinion on that, but what do you think the penalty should be?
You know, I also believe in mercy, and we have a God of mercy. So I'm not sure. Maybe they're, and I'm glad the subject is on the table because we need to talk about it, but maybe there's a way of helping and counseling post-abortive women in today, you know, in 2016.
Well, I'm sure there is, but I mean, don't you believe, that fetuses are people, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, and if you kill a fetus on purpose, then you're committing murder, right?
I do believe that.
All right. So
I think people do it on not knowing it's murder.
Well,
some.
I mean, for the sake of the argument, if you're concluding that you're stopping it because it's murder and somebody goes ahead and does it anyway, what is the punishment going to be? Are you just going to give them a slap on the wrist?
I don't know, Kelly. Like I said, I'm thinking for myself, but jail would have.
That's dangerous, Lydia. Thinking for yourself is dangerous. All right. Let me ask you this. Because nobody else was brave enough to call in on the thing. You know, David Bowie, I still am astonished by this. And like my brother said, he could have been hallucinating. But he said on his last words were feminism is cancer. What's your position on feminism? Because I know obviously at one time you must have been more pro-feminism if you got an abortion and probably supported abortion rights. You've had a transition. Maybe you're more religious now, but, what is your take as a female on feminism?
I was in the first ERA march, and feminism is what gave me the information on how to get the abortion long ago. But I believe there's a godly order, you know, the Bible has, and I do believe in equal rights for women.
Yeah.
But we've gotten topsy-turvy where, you know, women are dominating men a lot in the culture.
Well,
I'm uncomfortable.
What if you ran into Kathy and Kathy said, basically, you know, I don't believe in religion. You've got to persuade me feminism is wrong based on just logic. What would you tell her?
Well, look at the family. It's out of order. There's no fathers in the home. The government is the husband and the dad, raising the children. Something's really wrong, and the children are growing up really wounded from that.
If you see a picture of Obama and think he's your father, there's something wrong, in other words. All right, Lydia, anything else?
No, thank you.
Thanks, great call. Have a good day.
Okay.
Bye-bye. All right, folks, got two calls out of one there. Let's take a break here, 7:34. And you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. My brother's filming me in the studio. He is apparently not aware that we have the Blog Talk Radio, where you can get the show live or download it every single day. Look up Blog Talk Radio. Kelly O'Connell will be right back to talk a little bit about illegal immigration and some of the wild stuff going on. 7:35.
In this heart of mine, this ain't no crazy.
7:38, and I found kind of a strange story about Mormons who thought it was the thinking it's the end of the world, and I'll bring that on tomorrow. But anyway, you've got. And I'm not saying all Mormons believe that, but there was a story about one of these sects that involved the Jeffs family that believed the end days are nigh.
Shortage of wives.
Yeah, it's probably not good when you have to marry your own niece. Border Patrol. Kevin and I were, my mom moved to an area that was about 30 miles from a polygamous, the largest polygamous community in the country at the time. What was your impression of Colorado City?
It was like going back into the 1800s, the dress and just their society, outlook of outsiders. We drove by there and they weren't very happy to see you coming in and kind of looking at their town.
And they the way they dressed was like Little House on the Prairie.
Exactly.
And if you saw them at Walmart or Costco, they huddled together.
Yeah, they were schooled up pretty good.
And they were, you couldn't help but feel sorry for them. There was a story about the Lost Boys. Who were they? Do you ever hear that story?
I think it was boys that were ejected and pretty much forced out of their homes and driven out of the area. I saw something about it on TV. I thought it was very sad.
They had taken these boys and basically dropped them off by the side of the road. They kicked them out. And the reason they did that is because if you have a polygamous community, all things being equal, some men will have more than one wife. They might have 5 or 10 wives, which leaves none for that many other males. And so those males have to be driven out. And so they ended up in Vegas with no functional education. And they ended up getting into drugs and prostitution and all kinds of things like that. And it was, there was a church that had started a ministry with them, but it was tremendously sad, tremendously sad group of people. And then Warren Jeffs was arrested, and somebody in his church, what started it all off was a man had taken his daughter and given it to his brother as a wife, and she was 16, 15, 14 at the time, whatever. I think she was young teens, and then she decided she didn't want to do that anymore, and so the dad came and horsewhipped her and almost killed her. She ended up in the hospital. And that started an investigation that ultimately brought down that community, that Hillsdale, Colorado City community. And they were built on the state line in case the federales showed up, they could run across the state line, or in case the state cops, I guess, showed up, they could run from one side of the town to the other. So anyway, Border Patrol Council says catch and release policy continues fueling illegal immigration. Officials last week spoke up about the Obama administration's so-called catch and release policies, blamed for hindering Border Patrol operations and encouraging illegal crossers from coming into the United States. And a recent letter from the National Border Patrol Council states a high-ranking member of the Obama administration confirmed to Border Patrol agents they had no intention of removing illegal border crossers that are being released and with an order to appear in court. And, there is a sense of lawlessness that has surrounded this administration that is just extraordinary. And even people out there who want to support illegals and say they've got this miserable life in Central America or Mexico, they're in danger. How can you possibly support the idea of just anybody shows up and they have as many rights or more rights than any American? They're going to be housed. They're going to be relocated. They're going to be given, put on social welfare immediately. They're trying to get them the vote. They get welfare. And it's just sad. Now we see Cuban migration to nearly double in the last quarter of 2015. And, you know, you just got to ask yourself, what is going on in this country? I have a little interview with the Border Patrol on Sean Hannity on why they're supporting Trump at 7:43.
And welcome back to Hannity. Now, for the first time in its history, the influential National Border Patrol Council is endorsing a presidential candidate during the primary season. That candidate is Donald Trump. Joining us now to discuss that endorsement, the vice president of the National Border Patrol Council, Sean Moran, as well as immigration attorney Francisco Hernandez. Sean, why the first time? What motivated your group to get involved this time?
Well, Sean, we think that border security is an important enough issue.
I wanted to ask your brother a clear question.
Danger,
this is DeBoer.
Not just our nation,
DeBoer,
but our communities that we needed to get
serious.
Yeah, I wanted
serious. To ask him,
to
is this still a short of a lie? Wouldn't the Marion Alaska?
Yeah. Well, I clearly think it is our number one national security issue.
Yes,
you know,
DeBoer, it's time for you
very
to relocate.
Simple to me, and you've actually agreed
we
should build the wall, correct?
Yes, it's time for
I'm
you
okay
to relocate.
Building the wall first, if that's what you want to do.
I
want to build the wall.
No.
Okay, we'll build the
but,
wall.
But here's the
border
patrol.
Do you want to be put on hold and ask them on the air?
The border so much that people want jobs and opportunity that America offers, and I'm all in favor of people coming legally after we have an opportunity to vet them. But right now we have 95 million Americans out of work. Illegal immigrants compete for jobs. Illegal immigrants increase the number of applicants. That drives down potential wages for Americans. And the most important issue, I'm sure you would agree, is that we can't have ISIS and other terror groups crossing that border that want to bring harm to our towns and cities, right?
I agree with you, but an endorsement by a union doesn't make us any safer. CBP doesn't care who's president. They care who's Congress because Congress apportions the money for their raises and job security. God bless them. They have a right to endorse anyone they want, but it's not a game changer. It's not going to get Donald Trump elected over Hillary Clinton. It's not going to make a difference, but they have a right to express their opinion. Nothing wrong with that.
Okay, but wait a minute.
But
you're supporting.
I've said it before. We're going to have to legalize 100,000 Mexicans.
Sean, let me ask you this.
Because citizens aren't going to go to the desert and do it.
I've been in drug warehouses, floor to ceiling drugs confiscated at the border.
Yes.
I sat in an intelligence briefing, Sean, 642,000 crimes committed against.
All right. This is the main thing to know from this is they're supporting Trump, but they are claiming the Border Patrol are claiming that the laws are being carved out and there's nothing really left to these laws anymore. We do have a caller, DeBoer, who wanted to ask my brother Kevin a question. DeBoer, go ahead.
Yes, Kevin, it's good to hear you. I was curious, is there still a shortage of women to marry in Alaska?
Yes, there is.
Because in certain industries, which are male-dominated, certain areas of the state will have a higher concentration of male workers
such,
in industries, such as fishing, timber industry, which are male-heavy jobs. And in those areas, there's a disproportionate percentage of women that are available for these gentlemen.
DeBoer, it is time for you to relocate. There's a man waiting up there for you with a big.
No, I have Pennsylvania because of the cold. I could not take Alaska.
No, you'll have to get up there, and you can have an extra warm igloo set up for you.
Alaska's actually getting warmer, so it might be nicer in Alaska than Pennsylvania.
Is there a lot of Mormons in Alaska?
There are some, but I don't think it's as high as a concentration as you might find down here.
You can't have a polygamous nation if there's just men, DeBoer.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Yes, that's true.
Unless it's the Rock Hudson state.
It could be reverse polygamy where a wife might have 10 husbands.
Polyandry. DeBoer, that's what you need, 10 men working for you.
Yeah, maybe he can fix my bathroom window.
DeBoers also finds offensive animals brought into supermarkets that drop hair, saliva, dandruff, and also animal waste. Do they allow that in Alaska?
Not at all.
DeBoer, it sounds like paradise for you. Anything else?
That's it. Have a good day now.
You too. Thanks. All right, folks. Got some valuable information from Brother Kev there. All right, we'll come back and talk about whether Obama could have stopped ISIS. 748, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450, if you got Alaska questions. We'll be right back.
But it's real. You're someone else's love now. You're not mine.
And I'm here with Brother Kev, who's just about to leave for back for Alaska. And Kevin, you're going through Dallas?
Going to take my chances on getting through there and not getting hit by a tornado.
There have been a lot of tornadoes through Dallas and Louisiana, Georgia, blah, blah, blah. So, all right. So we've got U.S. commandos are being trained to stop terrorists with dirty bombs. And they've been trained to seize and disable nuclear or radioactive bombs, providing a crucial last line of defense. Now, we know that ISIS has so much money that they're basically billionaires because of all the oil funding that they've gotten. For some reason, we didn't go in and blow up the oil lines and the oil trucks. And as you recall, the president ordered the bombers to first drop leaflets to the drivers of the oil rigs that were carrying the oil to get out of the rig so we can blow it up, which obviously takes away any sense of surprise. Why he did that, I mean, you know, like a lot of other things, who knows? Here's another article in the Wall Street Journal. Islamic State hijacks Mosul University chemistry lab for making bombs. And so, you know, you've got billionaire radical terrorists who want to blow us to smithereens. Now, here's news from NBC that Obama nixed CIA plans that could have stopped ISIS, according to an official. Check this out. And hold on a second here.
The shadows to talk about his work, but in an exclusive interview with NBC News, a former CIA field operative speaks out about his time overseas, and more specifically about U.S. plans never carried out to overthrow Syria's Bashar al-Assad. He sat down with our chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel.
Spring 2012. Amateur video appears to show a Syrian government attack on civilians in a village called Hula. Witnesses say it was part of a massacre to crush what was then a growing rebel uprising. The regime denied responsibility. A young CIA operative, Doug Laux, had recently arrived in the region after two tours tracking insurgents in Afghanistan. His boss had just told him his new assignment was to find out more about the Syrian rebels.
He taps you and tells you your mission in Syria is what?
He says, look, you're going to be my eyes and ears. You know, I want to know what's going on.
In a new book redacted by the CIA before its release next week, Laux says the goal in Syria was clear. Find covert ways to back the rebels and remove President Bashar al-Assad. Laux says he made detailed recommendations.
I was saying, hey, here's a possible solution. What if we try this? What if we try this?
Although a version of Laux's plan to arm rebels was publicly supported by senior officials in the Obama administration at the time, it was never implemented. The administration sent some weapons, but moderate Syrian rebels, known as the Free Syrian Army, collapsed, and ISIS carved out a terrorist enclave. Critics say it was one of President Obama's biggest foreign policy mistakes.
I'm confident we would be looking at a different Syria today if the President of the United States had not overruled David Petraeus, then head of the CIA, Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, and Leon Panetta, who was then Secretary of Defense, who all unanimously recommended arming and training the Free Syrian Army.
But would have arming the rebels early on stopped the birth of ISIS? Interestingly, Laux doesn't think so.
So what about the argument if more had been done to help the rebels, help people like through the CIA or military help? If more had been done back then, there'd be no Paris, there'd be no Brussels, there'd be no ISIS.
No, I think that's impossible to predict, and I think that's impossible to say. I think that ISIS was brewing regardless.
Laux resigned from the CIA in frustration. He says his intention isn't to be a whistleblower, but merely to describe what it was like to be a CIA case officer in wartime.
Isn't part of the CIA, isn't the mantra that you sign up and say, I'm not going to tell my war stories?
A lot of my colleagues are upset with me and, I mean, livid with me about it.
It's a great...
All right. So anyway, could the president have stopped ISIS? I think the time to stop ISIS was before we pulled out of Iraq, because Iraq was not ready for us to leave. We know that because the country was basically then overrun by this group of upstart rebels, and to have a different policy in Afghanistan, including as well as Syria, as well as these other places like Libya, where it's become a stronghold. We should have never supported Muslim Spring because that led to ISIS taking over Libya. We should have, and it also almost handed over, and it did hand over for about a year, the Egyptian government to the Muslim Brethren. And if you recall, one of the craziest things, and I think one of the most damning things about Obama's time of leadership was he was furious when the Egyptian army kicked out Egyptian president and removed the Muslim Brethren. And at that point, I realized that there was never going to be any saving the Obama presidency because he didn't have the same values. Well, Kevin, it's been great to have you on the show. Any concluding thoughts?
Yes, I just want to thank the citizens of Las Cruces and the radio station. It's been an honor to be on here with my brother, and I love him very much, and the family's very proud of him, and I've had a great time here, and look forward to coming back.
Coming back and doing more broadcasting. I'm not sure if everybody listening is a citizen, though. But don't self-deport if you're listening in to this show. Come to my law office. Let's get you legal. But anyway, thanks for tuning in today, and we're going to have this coverage tomorrow of a little bit more of this Tuesday primary. It's kind of exciting. I mean, to not have any idea what's going to happen at the convention is truly just unbelievable, isn't it? And we're in these modern times, and Donald Trump has kind of taken over the whole party by himself, a one-man insurgency. And it's just so unbelievable. And also not knowing if Hillary could be indicted, although Hillary has just stated she's never been contacted by the FBI. Now, maybe her secretary was contacted. I don't know. She, you have to parse everything that she says, but it is possible that she will get away with this. Anyway, thanks for tuning in to the Kelly O'Connell Show. I really appreciate it on AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We're going to come back in 22 hours and do it again. Have a great day. Ciao.
Not my